Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Craig J. Cox, who's written a book called Aware of Their Presence, which covers his experiences of alien abduction, which started when he was a young child. So, because UFOs and ETs are certainly one of my favourite subjects, I'm looking very much towards hearing what Craig has to say about it. So, are you there, Craig?
Yes, I am. Hi, Mike.
That's great.
Yes.
I'd like to start at the beginning, because I'm sure that must be of interest. When did the first abduction take place? I mean, how old were you? And tell us exactly what took place.
Well, actually, the abductions actually didn't start really until my mid-20s. Even though I had a sighting of a UFO when I was very young, I didn't think much of it until the first abduction, because before the first abduction, I had memories of that sighting. And it was very strange because the memories were very vivid. So then all of a sudden the abduction started. So it's almost as if I was being reminded that there was something else to me from that sighting.
Right.
And
carry on.
Oh, and I was just going to say, as far as the abductions themselves, my experiences were not that much different from many others in the sense that it dealt with a lot of physical examinations and whatnot, many physical examinations pretty much, and the same feeling of not being in total control of the situation, not being able to move. And we are also talking about the grays. So, you know, that was pretty obvious actually from the start.
Right. When you had that initial sighting as a youngster, you said it was still pretty vivid. Can you remember what type of craft you saw? Can you describe it?
Sure. Well, I can tell you it was not very high in the air. This actually occurred when my mother took my sisters and myself to Alabama to visit a relative. And, you know, we're from Ohio, so it was a good long drive. This seemed to cap the actual trip, because once we got there, once we actually arrived at the house, we were greeted by some relatives. It was nighttime, very deep in the night, and in the deep south, it's very dark. And we were basically introducing ourselves and hugging people and, you know, hugging a bunch of relatives I didn't know. And I looked up, and there was an object which looked like a spherical object right over us, with making no noise, going straight across over us. But when I realized that this is something I didn't know and I've never seen before, it dipped down, and it's almost as if somebody just turned it off like a light. It was just gone.
Right. I guess in view of what subsequently happened with the abductions, it couldn't have been too long before you connected the sighting with the later contact. So you were in your 20s then when you were first abducted. Would you like to describe a little bit more about how that took place? For example, where were you when it happened? How were you lifted up into the craft and so forth?
Sure. What actually happened was I remember being in bed, waking up, and being able to move. Now, we do know what night paralysis is, and sleep paralysis, you know, can happen and whatnot, but this felt different. I mean, this felt so, for a second, I thought I was dead, because I just did not, you know, even though I could see where I was, and my eyes could move, but I couldn't move at all. I was flat on my back, and I remember feeling my body lift from the bed, and I remember looking at the closet door and then kind of gauging where I was. And I had to be about, I would say, at least 4 feet above the bed. And the next thing I remember was seeing everything tunnel away from me as if I was being taken out. So that was the first few were all like that. And they always consisted of a physical examination, which, and still I could not move. But they didn't let me see much in the beginning, Mike. At the beginning, for the most part, it seemed to me like they did not want me to see everything. That first abduction, actually, I remember when I was brought back, was more traumatic than being taken in the first place, because basically they brought me back the same way, I couldn't move for a few seconds on the bed, and then I was able to move. I tried to get up and turn on the light, and the light bulb blew out. I was so much in shock that I ended up getting sick, and luckily I did not eat a lot the night before, so it wasn't too bad, but the fact was is that it is very shocking. When you first go through this, it is not fun, even if they did not hurt you.
Obviously, because I'm interested in the subject, I've read quite a lot of reports of abductions by the Greys. Now, some people have described it as being particularly painful. Did you have that sort of experience?
Surprisingly, no. I did know a little bit about the alien abduction phenomena before this even happened to me, but it wasn't something that I was delving into. It wasn't something that I took a whole lot of interest in because, it hadn't happened to me. Although I did find it somewhat fascinating, I was not necessarily a fan of science fiction movies and television, but the subject, because I had had a UFO sighting when I was a child, made me believe that, yes, there is something else out there, and then, there's no reason to believe that there isn't something else out there. But,
right.
Of course, when this began happening to me, then all of a sudden it was to the point where I did have to take an interest because it had become part of my own life, what happens to a lot of people. But overall, though, believe it or not, I have not had the kind of I've heard of other people being hurt in some ways by the Greys. I've never had that happen to me. They've never hurt me, and they made it clear that they were not going to hurt me. But the problem is, I thank them for the fact that they have not done that. But the problem is not knowing exactly what they're doing and why.
Do you feel that when you're in their presence that they have some particular power or energy that puts you at ease, whereas otherwise you might be in an actual state of fear?
To some extent, yes. I mean, there have been some incidents where they did kind of talk to me and calm me down. If you want to say the word talk, I mean, again, it's really more of a telepathic kind of thing. It's more or less more of a feeling than it is that you hear words. The way I usually describe it is that, like if you're at a traffic stop, when the light is red and then it turns green, you don't hear anybody tell you to go. You just know that you're supposed to go. So it's kind of that's the best way to describe it as far as the communication goes. But basically, yeah, they for the most part have been fairly decent with me, which gives me the impression that there are different types of these Greys, and the way they deal with people can be varied.
I was just about to ask you the very question about the different types of beings, because I have read reports where in the background there has apparently been a more humanoid type of being that's somewhat taller than the Greys, which seems to be overseeing the whole thing, almost as though they're there to make sure that it goes off correctly. Did you get anything like that?
Well, I did write about this in the book, in my book, Aware of the Presence. There is a chapter toward the end. I won't give away everything, of course, but there is a chapter toward the end where that incident that happened in Alabama in my childhood was revisited, and I found out that a lot more happened during that time than just seeing this UFO flying overhead and dipping down and disappearing. Apparently, there was a major contact at that time, and there was one, and I remember, it's kind of hard to, I'm not going to describe it all because it would take a little while, but I will tell you this. They had me seated. I did not want to open my eyes, and they kept telling me, "We want you to see. We want you to open your eyes." So I opened my eyes, and I saw many of them walking around just as if it was a day in the park in this craft. I mean, they were just walking. It looked like a doctor's office, but it looked like there were about 10 of them walking around just doing their job, and I'm thinking to myself, how is this happening? But there was one that did stand out, and it wasn't so much that he was bigger than them, but his appearance was a lot different from the rest of them. And that distinguished him, and I got the feeling that he was a little bit more of the in-charge person.
Yes, yes. What were the differences? Did he have different shaped eyes, for example?
His features, he basically still looked somewhat like a gray, although the differences were his facial features overall were a lot more like a human, because even though they were still very stony, you know, in a sense, and very crafted, the cheekbones were prominent, there was a nose, and there was a prominent chin. And I remember going, you know, this isn't, and he passed me right by. It's almost as if he never said anything to me. There was no communication. But the way he passed me by was almost as if he wanted me to see him. And, you know, he did very much look different from the rest of them. And I feel like there was some kind of, you know, there was some kind of leadership quality about him, even though personally I kind of felt unnerved by him.
Yes, yes. Okay. So let's move on to what was obviously quite an amazing experience for you in April 2005, when some event took place in connection with your job that led you to finding out something about yourself that you hadn't realized before.
Yes, Mike. That was a day I guess I won't forget, and it's still something that lingers today, because after all the things that I've talked about and written about and whatnot about my experiences, there was never really something tangible to back it up. Well, literally, you know, I have to say I do work with selling, you know, men's suits, and I do work retail at this time, and I've been doing that for a little while. Well, on this date, I just happened to be talking to a coworker, and it's a slow time, so, you know, and I'm about 5'6" and a half. I leaned up against one of the scanners that we have to ring up people, and the scanner, the way where it was positioned, was pretty much at my waist, and it was pointed downward. So all of a sudden, it beeps as if it rang up an item. And my coworker looked at me and looked at the machine and goes, "Was that you?" And I just said, "Yeah, but I don't know how." So we looked at the screen. The computer screen said, "Error, UPC SKU barcode cannot be found in system," which is another way of saying that whatever item was just wrong is not something that belongs to the store. So usually that's what we get when somebody brings in an item from another store to return something, and they forgot that they bought it somewhere else, and the barcode does not match. But it goes further than that. I did a little investigating on that, and I actually called the scanner company, the people that make the scanners, and did ask them, is there anything else beyond a barcode that would cause an error message to show up on the computer screen due to the scanner ringing it up? And they surprisingly told me, well, the only thing besides an error barcode would be a transmission signal. So that was very surprising, and that pretty much tells us that whatever was in my bag, you know, I did not find out exactly what was in my bag. I just knew something was there.
Yes, I read in your write up about the book that at some later date you did have someone who examined you more closely, but he was very reluctant to try and take the implants out.
Well, okay, well, before I go into that, I have to point out to you and the listeners actually that where their presence ends, it's before those things were found. It's before that incident. It's just that Yeah, things keep unfolding, and it's almost like I have to keep, I'm running behind to write about it or talk about it, but the book pretty much covers the early incidents of my childhood and also the main abduction experiences that I had in my 20s and 30s. I'm now 43. So later on, we do have time to go through this, right? I didn't know if you wanted to go to a commercial break or anything.
I'm okay. No, you can carry on. I mean, my voice needs resting, so you've got it all yourself.
Okay. All right, no problem. Well, after the incident at work, and after, you know, something was found out, and after I called the scanner company to find out that a transmission signal might be something else that might be causing this, my wife and I, we traveled to Sedona. We were going to leave Ohio to go to Arizona. And upon my time in the airport, of course, I went through the metal detector, and it totally made noise, lit up, whatever, detected something. So I got rid of of course, the keys were already in the tray, and my glasses were off and whatnot. I had to walk through it about three times, and the third time it lit up again. So finally the security people came up and said, "Sir, can you sit here for a second?" And I'm thinking, oh, great, I'm being detained, and this is not the way you want to start your vacation. So I sat and I waited for a few minutes, and my wife waited for me, and they came back out with this wand detector, the metal detector, the handheld one.
Yes.
And they waved it around my body. The guy started to wave it around my body, and as soon as he got to my back, near my waist, it sounded off that there was something detected. And he patted me down and goes, "Well, there's something with your lower torso, but you can go." Obviously I had no weapons, no nothing. Obviously people are being very careful nowadays because of the new security laws. So my wife and I, we boarded the plane, and my wife, the first thing she said to me was, "Okay, as soon as we get back, you have to get x-ray, because obviously there's something in your back." So when I got back, and that was in August, I did go get x-rayed, and the only way I got x-rayed about it, you have to understand this too, and I'm sure you do, that telling doctors about this kind of situation is not really the easiest thing in the world to do. To convince them to get you an x-ray because you suspect that you have alien implants in your back is not really going to go over very well. I did have actually something to stand up against that, because my doctor, I told her, there's a funny scar on my back that I've never known why it's there. I don't know what it looks like, but it's straight across. And she looked at it. It's near my waist. She said it looks like an incision scar, and then I proceeded to tell her what happened at the airport. And she said, "Okay, you know what, just go down to x-ray right now. Just give them this note, tell them that I went ahead and sent you down. We're not going to schedule you for an x-ray. We're just going to do it now." And even when I got the x-ray done, they weren't supposed to show me the x-rays immediately afterwards, but the technicians called me right in and said, "Look, okay, we ordinarily don't do this, but you need to come here." And I looked at it. They said, "You have two metallic objects in your spine," and I don't know how to explain it. They were asking me, "Do you have any idea how these would have gotten in there?" Because where they're positioned, they're near the spinal cord, and they're not near the buttocks. They're not to the point where it's like I swallowed something and it landed there. So they had no idea. So I had to basically tell them my theory also, but they couldn't throw it away. They couldn't throw away the theory. Technicians were actually the nicest people that I've dealt with in the medical field about this, but I've subsequently seen other doctors about this and about possibly getting them taken out. Nobody wants to take them out, and nobody wants to believe the theory that I have.
It sounds to me, Craig, as though some people have been warned off of not giving this type of thing the publicity, bearing in mind the whole ET and UFO subjects are rather covered up.
Well, true. Of course you have your natural skepticism, but at the same time, Mike, it surprises me because, there's no proof that's ever going to be enough for a cynic or a skeptic. The fact is that they keep screaming about showing people proof and having proof of something, and then you try to show it to them and they're covering their eyes. Well, how is anybody supposed to, show you anything if you just don't want to see it? So, I have gone to different doctors, including one hospital, one of the best in the world, actually, here in Ohio. I won't name it out, but most people kind of know which one it is. I went there, and they they tried to blow it off, too, just like, I think it's just a broken needle. And the doctor learned the hard way that, it wasn't just a broken needle. So there was an incident there, too, which kind of gave me and a friend of mine the impression that, there's something much more to this.
It's interesting to hear where your implants were located, because of the various ones I've read about, that seems to be a new one to me. And I think the most common one that I've come across is where they're planted in the nasal passages.
True. Well, you know, what's interesting too about that is that I do have a, this could just be me for all I know, excuse me, but I do tend to have a lot of nasal and sinus infections, apparently on one side. And I can't help but wonder, you know, based on the many years of researching and doing this and talking about it, if possibly they put something there and it's causing me problems.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of a recurrent type thing, and I've never really been able to shake it, but I don't know if I want to go get my nose x-rayed to see if there's anything there. And sometimes I don't even know what to know, I don't know if I want to know if there's anything there. But honestly, though, actually, this is the second time, Mike, that something's been found in my body. In the book, in the second chapter, which is called Needles, there were two similar objects found in my knee following an accident. And basically, they were taken out, and they were given to my mother. She put it in a photo album, and now we don't know where they are. So we're not sure if they got lost or somebody took them.
Right. One of the last implants I read about and saw photographs of was where a person had them in the wrist, and they actually surgically removed it so they were able to show it to you. I must say it was very minute in size. Did you get any idea of how big your implants were?
Well, I would say that actually the longer object is about the size of a sewing needle. It's actually fairly long. It's interesting, too, because when you look at it from the front view, it looks like one is kind of on top of the other. But the strange thing is that when you look at it from a side view, from the side x-ray, it almost looks as if the long one is kind of leaning into the toward the spinal cord, which gives you the idea that possibly this thing could be taking readings of me. I have to be honest with you, there have been lots of abductions that have happened after I've gotten ill or after I've had some kind of trauma, and they've shown up. And I can't help but wonder if maybe they're kind of got something there to gauge the nervous system. That could be one of many applications of this thing.
I guess the different sizes or shapes indicates a different type of function. My general impression is, and I don't know where I've got the information from, is that, as I think you once suspected, certainly some of them are tracking devices where they like to know where you are.
True. Well, it's interesting, too, that two of my major UFO sightings have happened in states that are far away from me when I've traveled. One was in Alabama and one was in Arizona when my wife and I got married. You know, we got married in Arizona and had a honeymoon there too. And it was a few days after that we had a major sighting right outside of our hotel suite, our bed and breakfast suite, I should say. And that's also in the book. This incident was very, very strange because, put it this way, when I look at it all together in retrospect, it does say that those objects could be tracking devices as well as other things. I mean, like I said, there could be many applications for them, but the fact that when I travel, I've seen crafts, it kind of gives me an impression that they kind of check up on you and make sure that you are where they think you are.
Right. I mean, just to interject a point here, how does your wife cope with all this?
She is actually pretty open-minded about it. At one point, she, you know, when you just make a claim about this kind of thing, even to people close to you, they try to be as objective as they can. But, you know, again, if you haven't experienced anything, it's very difficult to do that. However, my wife has looked into, you know, various religions, various subjects. So when I told her about this, and she's half Native American, so when I told her about this, this didn't really seem to shock her too much. It wasn't like a big deal. She knew who I was. We had known each other for years beforehand. So when I admitted that this was going on and that this was a possibility, she based it on the person that she knew as opposed to the subject matter. But when we went on our honeymoon, when we saw this object, there was no doubting that something was going on with Craig. You know, that something is following Craig. So when she saw this thing out there, too, I think any doubts that she had probably melted.
Right.
It'll melt it when we saw that. So it was a big saucer-shaped craft at night, gold with what looked like kind of a little, almost a array of a rainbow-type light underneath it. And as soon as I went to grab a camera to try to take a picture of it, it just blinked out of sight, just like the first one did, almost as if it knew I was going to do that. So I feel bad because I'm thinking, you know, there were some binoculars there, too. I should have grabbed those instead.
Yeah.
But, hey, you know, again, hindsight's 20/20. Given the chance again, I will not grab a camera. So if they're listening in, you know, don't worry about it.
Right. Now, one of the more unusual bits of evidence you have, which I don't think anybody else has come up with, which is something you can obviously tell us about, is when you found what you've described, I believe correctly, alien fingerprints on your bed.
Yeah. Well, there is a, I will say this is one of the earlier abductions. Now, Mike, I have to admit here that before this one happened, you know, when you have gone through this, there's a part of you that still wants to believe that you're just dreaming this, that you're just fantasizing, that this is some kind of memory from some traumatic thing in your past that was something that's tangible that you remember. And so you don't want to believe it. And I think sometimes these, you know, it seems to me like these beings will make themselves obvious in a way that will surprise you, but they made themselves obvious to tell me, I think, that, yes, this is real, and you shouldn't be doubting this, because after one particular incident where it was the first time they had ever actually communicated with me, they didn't tell me a whole lot. They never do. But usually they're kind of blunt about something. And they were saying something about, this is, again, you know, I felt the lift up from the bed and whatnot. But the next thing I remember, I was sitting up looking at what looked like a very long screen, and flashing images of what looked like Earth, you know, mountains, trees, forests, environmental kind of things. And I remember there was this voice kind of narrating almost, but I didn't know where it was coming from. It just seemed to be there. And I remember trying to look back, and something kept telling me, no, keep looking at the screen. But I wasn't really catching what they were saying. But then finally I realized, you know what, they're actually talking. So maybe let me pay attention to something. Let me catch something of this. And when I did that, the only line I remember was them saying something to the effect of, because of this reason, our people became very sick. And I remember catching that and retrieving it and just keeping it. And when I was brought back, it seemed to me like somebody was trying to wake me up to shake me awake. I didn't see who it was. I just remember somebody pushing my leg or something and, you know, like, come on, you know, snap out of it. So I did. I turned on the light, thought about what was said to me. I remember going to the bathroom to wash my face, just kind of wake myself up and clear my head. And it probably was about maybe, it had to be between 2 and 3 in the morning, somewhere in there. I came back to the bedroom. I left the light on because I just did not want to, in case there was going to be a return, engagement here or whatnot, performance, I didn't want to do this in the dark. So I just said, oh, okay, I know I'm 20-something years old, but I'm going to leave the light on. But it didn't matter because I leaned back, I turned to my left, and I saw what looked like kind of a smudge on the corner of the bed. And then I kind of looked up at it, and I realized that it looked like fingerprints. And then when I really looked at it, there were 3 long fingers, a long thumb, and what looked like the outline of a claw on the outside of the thumb. And it was a big hand, and I just looked at it, and I just could not believe what I was seeing. I took photographs of it the next day, or I had a friend actually take photographs of it the next day, and luckily somebody who is, again, who is open-minded. And, from there, I thought right there, okay, I've got some proof of this. Now that I know I'm not crazy, but you know what? That wasn't enough for a lot of people. It did get published in UFO Magazine, and they did do an article with me, or I wrote an article for them, and they published it and put the picture in there. But it really didn't go much beyond that, and not too many other people asked about it, and I had to let it go. I didn't let it go. Don't get me wrong. It's still there. I still have I didn't say in the air that I still have the sheet, but I kind of do. Not in the same place, of course, but basically, it didn't get what I thought it would get. And I was hoping that maybe I could get somebody to check it out to see what it's made of. I did call forensics people, and once I had to admit what this was, they never called back. So again, here we go with the skepticism again and just not being able to get anything across. But keeping in mind too, I was in my 20s, and if that had happened now, I would have approached it differently.
I still have to think myself that some people get warned off of having anything to do with it. But I have to say, looking at the photograph, which is in front of me now, it would seem to me that the type of fingerprints on there and the length would be typical of what I've seen, or the descriptions I've seen of the Grey's hands. They do seem to be have rather long fingers.
True. And it's also pretty obviously a left hand. You know, again, obviously it was left there deliberately. Now, I will tell you that there have been some weird theories I've gotten on that print. There are some who believe that, and this is not, by the way, before I even say one word, this is not something that I necessarily agree with. It's not something that I am going to, you know, promote. Now, the majority of people, including myself, believe that this is left by a being who was trying to, like I said, make a point and say that, you know, look, this is not, you know, something to be belittled by you. This is not something that you have to doubt. This is here, and here's the reason why. And then there are others. There's another small camp, a little subculture of people who have seen that print, who say that, and like I said, this is not something I'm promoting, but they say that that looks like the print of somebody getting back into bed.
Yeah.
Now, if that's the case, I don't know. I don't have any evidence of that, and I am not going to, you know, since I did not see anything like that, I am not going to say that that was the case.
No.
The fact is that there are some people who have approached me and said that that's what it looks like, and are you sure, and do you want to get regressed and blah, blah, blah. And like, no, I that's when I become a skeptic.
Yeah. Well, one has to say what they think is up to them, and since you don't need any proof, you don't really have to waste your time trying to prove it to anybody else, do you?
Not really. All I do, Mike, really is present what I have, and that would include the picture that you're looking at, the stories, not the stories, but basically the accounts of what happened in the book, the x-rays. I do the best I can to just show people, and if they don't believe me, they don't believe me, but I am not going to stand and argue with them about it and try to make them believe me. Most people are objective, and they do look at what the evidence is, and they do ask the right questions, which is why I would like some of the medical and scientific people to ask the same questions. You know, how are these things in his back? How could they have gotten there in a dangerous position that they are? What are these handprints, and can we take a look at them, and or the sheet that, you know, was left on can still be tested, you know. So, I mean, it's just a matter of, I think it's going to be, though, we have to get out of Chapter 1 of UFO and alien subject matter and get to Chapter 2, because we've been kind of redoing Chapter 1 over and over again when it comes to the knowledge of this stuff.
Yes. Now, I'm wondering if over the years you have read, or somebody has put it to you, that the Greys have said at different times that there are very few abductions as such, that most of what people call abductions are prearranged pickups with souls that have come to the earth by arrangement with them to help the Greys in their efforts to help their race. I won't continue any further with that story, but is that something you've heard or you're aware of?
Well, yes, I've heard of that. Again, that's one thing that I'm not sure I totally agree with, but on the other hand, I can't disagree with it either, because I'm still trying to figure out exactly what this is. And it does seem to be like it could be, you know, something that is prearranged. I don't necessarily agree with people who say that, you know, that look at me after, let's say, I do a lecture or something and say, you agreed to this. I don't necessarily think that's really fair, because I don't remember agreeing to something like that. And, you know, I'd like to see the evidence of what I did agree to being taken and being probed and being, you know, not probed, but you know what I mean? Just, you know, being examined and being, you know, whatever. It's just like I just don't necessarily believe that. But on the other hand, I can't discount anything either. I have to listen to as many theories
well,
as they
you
are.
You mentioned
really.
a little earlier about, I guess, what was one of the few words that you heard inside you when they mentioned something about their race. And the story I've heard is that it's dying out, and they've come to the Earth to create hybrids of greys and humans to save their race. Now, that sounds pretty plausible to me.
Well, it does sound pretty plausible. It seems to me like, obviously, from what they've done to, you know, men and women, and it always seems that they have some very big interest in reproduction, that obviously there's you know, some kind of connection to that. I don't know if it's because they are dying or if it's because we're dying or what, but it does seem to be that there's some kind of genetic manipulation that they're doing. And maybe manipulation is a tough word to use on this, but there's something genetically that they are doing, some kind of engineering. It's been pretty obvious over the years that that's been the case. They have taken something from me. I'm not going to get too blunt about it, but I did mention it in the book. And but it only happened once, actually. There was only one time for that I remember. But they made it pretty clear that that's what they were doing. But overall, though, again, still, I have to credit them in a sense that they have not hurt me. I just want to know exactly who they are. Of course, you do have the religious people who say that they're all the devil, that they all represent, you know, Satan and whatnot. And then you have the other court that says that they're all angels of light and they're doing the right thing and they're trying to save us and save themselves and blah, blah, blah. I can't, honestly, Mike, I can't go into either one of those camps. Hey, I'm pretty much neutral on this, and I'm waiting for those answers to come by.
Well, let's be fair. I mean, unless you have your own proof, and you've got a lot more proof of the existence of greys than most people, you can't just go around accepting other ideas until you do have your proof. So I can well understand that you just sit aside of all this and wait for something to come up.
Well, yeah, you know, it would have to be something that, well, I have to say this too, that there have been some times, I think I mentioned earlier, that they have sometimes helped me out, and I've written about that, and they have helped me out sometimes with health issues, but they also helped me out once when I was leaving a late-night job and I was just walking home, and I almost got jumped by a bunch of guys, and yet somehow this craft shows up and looks like it's flying toward me, and it's very close. And the next thing I know, I look back behind me to see where these guys were, and they disappeared. And then I looked to see where this craft was, and it was higher up in the air than it was when I saw it. So it just kind of slowly flew off. I remember seeing just a huge, what looked like a big boomerang kind of actually flying off. And it flew off with no noise. And I figured, well, they intervened again. It didn't really hit me until a couple hours later after I got home, and I stayed up, you know, sitting up in bed thinking about it, going, oh, my God, they actually intervened, and they stopped something here. That I did write about in the book, and that's a very, you know, that's one of the favorite chapters that people come up to me about and say, oh, yeah, let me ask you about this chapter, and it's usually that one.
Yes. That's certainly very interesting. Up to now, I mean, can you count up the number of abductions that you've experienced?
No. Oh, no. I kind of lost count, to be honest with you. To be very honest with you, it got to be so many at one point in California when I lived there back in the late 80s, early 90s. There was one particular year where it seemed to me like, you know, I would put a check mark on each time I remembered it happening. And I remember one month, I think it was like a July, I had about like 15 check marks on there. And I'm going, well, why is this happening so much? But I have to be honest with you, there were some health issues that I was having. And I'm wondering if maybe, and this is something that just came to mind actually just recently, but I'm wondering if maybe there was something that was kind of wrong and they were treating me for it. You know, maybe it's something I couldn't feel or see, but something that they could see, and that it would have caused me some major problems later on, so they kept coming back in order to administer some treatment of some type. Again, I don't want the listeners, I don't want them to get the impression that I'm again, being one of those angel of light people, but it did seem to be like the repetitive of the repetitive nature that they used to show up and to take me. It seemed to me like there was something that they were doing it for, as opposed to just their own reasons. There might have been something else. So, but that's just again, I don't know for sure, but it's a possibility.
Right. Now, clearly another very interesting aspect of one of your meetings with the Greys was when they gave you some insight to the future. I think you said it was pretty shocking, but can you tell us a little bit about that experience and what type of things they were showing you?
Well, actually, what they kind of showed me was actually more personal. Because, when I say personal, it doesn't mean that I can't talk about it, but basically, they, years before I met my wife, showed me what my wife looked like. Now, this is when I lived in California. I'm in Ohio now, so I had no idea who this was when I saw her. But there have been some of them. I'm trying to think of, there were a couple of incidents, and right now, you have to excuse me because they're not coming to mind directly, but, there were a couple of incidents of when they've shown me something and it actually happened. I didn't make a big deal out of it, but, they did kind of show me some things. And, some of them are coming back to me a little bit. And the reason now, I guess, anyway, I have to admit that I don't want to say it, because we were talking earlier about how some of the religious folks get very nervous about anything paranormal. If I were to mention some of the things that they had mentioned to me, some of these, the Greys had mentioned to me, which I don't know for sure are accurate or not, the fact is that I don't want a false prophet stamp on my forehead from, people who are very, very religious. I have no problem with people who are religious. I mean, I have a deep belief in God myself, but I can't deny what's going on with me too, as far as what these experiences are. So, I love God, but I do know that these aliens exist, and it's something that's happening at the same time. So, but that's right. So maybe there may be a time later where I will talk about things like that, but right now I'm a little bit apprehensive.
I gather, listening to the underground news on the internet, that Obama's probably made some indications that he wants to release information about UFOs, etc. Do you think that would do your own type of experience a lot of good? I mean, in general, that people get to know about these things?
Well, it depends on what information is released. I mean, in other words, I was saying something earlier about being on Chapter 1 on information when it comes to UFOs and aliens. If it's just confirmation of that Chapter 1, then we're not really learning anything new. I think it's great that if the president does want to say, hey, there's something going on here and we're going to release these things, that would be great. Or any other leaders, actually, of the, of other countries, major countries. But the fact is that if it doesn't really go beyond, we all know about the Roswell events. We know about, the possibility of Majestic and whatnot. These things we've heard for many years, and this isn't really new news. So to say, okay, now we're putting an official stamp on it, that doesn't really help people like you and me who have already kind of either experienced something or researched it and know about it already. So I would hope that whatever does open up, it would be even more than that. It would go beyond that. So it can kind of validate people like myself, and we wouldn't have anything to be feeling funny about anymore as far as like what other people think, which I really don't care about anyway, but let's face it is kind of a dark cloud over you most of the time.
There is a school of thought through channeled messages from other types of space people that we are awaiting what they often refer to as first contact, that is, the first open contact that they can make through agreement with the governments, and that doesn't appear to be too far away. Now, I would think that would certainly take us on to Chapter 2, if not Chapter 3.
I would agree. If something like that happened and something were that obvious, The people who have been, you know, a lot of people who are skeptics are not really skeptics, they're just very fearful. And I don't say that to be mean to them, but the fact is that they're not used to things that are new. They're not used to change. They want things to stay the same. And, you know, they'd be very satisfied if everything did stay the same, if nothing changed. But the fact is that it's all out there. And, you know, for people like me and you and whatnot, we kind of know that this could happen. I've always gotten the feeling, and this is just my thought, but you know, I've always gotten the feeling that it would be something that everybody can see and nobody can deny. And I don't know if they're necessarily going to ask for permission to do that. I mean, this isn't going to be, you know, I think people think of the movies and think about what happens in the movies when it comes to aliens. 90% of the time they're trying to take over somebody or something or a planet or whatever, and, you know, so it's very negative. So a lot of people try to keep it in the movie fantasy, you know, arena without thinking of this as a real possibility, which is why, you know, a lot of people are skeptical of it. But, yes. You know, there could be something that's going to be, you know, very obvious to everyone, and in that case, you would not be able to deny it.
No, absolutely. Apart from your experience with the Greys, just as a matter of interest, have you had any other UFO sightings of different sort of craft?
Well, you know what, actually, Mike, actually, I've had, let's see, I'm starting to lose count of the sightings now, but actually, no, I think I've had about four sightings, and all four of the objects have been different from each other.
Yeah.
But one thing they have in common is that they're always up close. It's never a case of seeing some dot in the sky with a lot of stars and a dot that looks like it's moving. It's always something very close up. So I've never been undermined when it comes to seeing something that is unusual in the sky. They've made themselves very clear each time that I've seen them. The first one, again, was a spherical object. The next one was kind of a, I'm trying to put these all in perspective because there was a big stretch between the first sighting and the adult sightings. So I guess the second one would be that boomerang one with the three lights at each point, basically.
Yeah.
Then there was the huge traditional saucer shape in Sedona, where we saw that my wife and I saw that. So, now there was one other sighting, which I still don't know I don't know what I saw. I mean, okay, that's what UFOs are, but this was a daytime sighting. And I remember I think I was waiting for something. I was waiting for something outside. I think it might have been at a bus stop, I believe. This was like a few years ago. And something flew over me, and there's no cloud in the sky, and it just looks like a big black rectangle. And I'm going, well, that's nobody's kite, because it looks like it's going at about, you know, 400 miles an hour. But it was low. And I'm going, did anybody else see that? I mean, there's no noise or whatever, but there was nobody else around me, so it wasn't like I could say, hey, look, you know. But that was what I would call a fleeting sighting. But the fact that it was right over me again makes me kind of, you know, suspicious of things. I want to add something else onto that Sedona sighting that I wrote about. Basically, that happened on a Thursday night. That was on Labor Day weekend here in the United States. That was in May. And that happened on a Thursday night. The next, you know, the following day, that Friday, went by just like any other day did, and as far as when we were on our honeymoon. You know, we did the same things that we, you know, did. We went out, had fun, came back.
Yeah.
But the Saturday morning after that, we were awakened by something else in the sky. There were a bunch of military helicopters flying right over our room and right to the area where we saw the craft. Now, this was before we were going to breakfast, and I think, you know, it's like I remember hearing it going, and I remember saying to my wife, what is that? Sounds like a helicopter or whatever, but it kept getting lower and lower. And then we're talking about the ones with the double rotors, going right over our room and right to the area where we saw the craft. Now, my wife admitted to me that this was the first time she was nervous about this stuff because the fact that they were flying so low and they were flying right over our room. And I remember seeing them fly toward there. There were five of them. I looked at her. She looked at me. I said, okay, you know what? We don't know anything. Let's just go to breakfast.
Right, yes. Craig, time's rolled on so nicely here. We've actually reached the last few minutes of the program.
Wow,
I will require the last minute simply to sign off and give my listeners next week's guest details. So in a couple of minutes that are left for you, would you like to tell our listeners where they can obtain your book?
Okay, Aware of Their Presence is right now exclusively available on Amazon.com, or you can go to BookSurge.com. Amazon actually bought BookSurge.com, so you can go to either one of those sites. But Amazon is actually obviously the more recognizable one. And it's a fairly short book. It's about 202 pages, but it is a fast read. And not to be, egotistical about it, but people have reviewed it and very much liked it. So I'm very happy about that. I hope the readers, the new readers, are happy about that too when they get it. Because I don't waste time talking about the experiences. I go right to it.
Right, yes. Now that sounds very interesting indeed, and I'm very delighted to have had you on my program.
Thank you for having me on.
Obvious reason. So thank you very much, Craig.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. So I'll say goodbye to you. Have a happy Easter. And I'll
thank
tell
you.
My listeners that next week I have Maya, who is an author of a book called The Power of Illusion. She's interested in helping people release fear, and she feels there is an easy technique to use which will release it from the unconscious mind. She wants to help people so that they can live in truth and discover happiness. So, a little bit different from the norm, but also sounds interesting again. So thank you very much for being with me today, and I hope you can be with me next week. God bless you all. Thank you.